The Samosa Whisperer by Nikesh Shukla. It's the fourth restaurant along the Ealing Road that welcomes Prakash's strange request. They're having a slow day. The chef is going through an existential crisis, having had all his cooking outsourced to a local catering company that delivers every menu item in plastic containers every morning. And all his extensive years of training under Chef Rajput Ali Lal of the Vera Swami in London's fashionable West End is now wasted on reheating other people's food. The manager is off work, sick with food poisoning. He ate at home last night for the first time in 2 years. The prawns were out of date. Prakash is wearing jeans, a t-shirt with Spider-Man on it, black trainers, and a light coat, and hasn't shaved in 4 days. He hasn't got a man bag with him. The only thing he carries is the book. The chef, Ramsab, is sitting at the back of the restaurant, listening to the new Arctic Monkeys album loudly, glad to be out from under the strict Bollywood regime that rules with an iron melody when the manager is on the premises. The waiters are smoking in the kitchen, at the back, near the extractor fan. It's warm enough for them to smoke outside, but tiny rebellions alleviate the repetitiveness of their normal working day. Ealing Road is blocked, as usual. It's Sunday, and the cash and carries are full of mazis and khakis and fibres, stocking up on the week's aubergines, okras and potatoes. Fresh coriander is smelt and picked at, noses and fingers unshy to the merchandise. The men are sat outside cafes, chewing betel nut juice and spitting it out on the poor pavement. Blotches of pollock-esque dirt lining the pavement like a gauntlet. Bhangra throbs from passing cars, house-proud with subwoofers that betray loud thuds into the street. Inside, one can only assume it sounds amazing. Children run around, unafraid of broken Britain. Boys smile at clusters of girls dressed in black. Clusters of girls deconstruct the failings of all the local potential husbands. When Prakash gets home, he will notice a reddish tint to the sole of his trainers, where they have trod on fresh betel nut splurts. He will be annoyed. Ramsab listens to Prakash's odd request with a smile, bemused at first, charmed at the end. He categorically decides that he will help this man. The waiters can handle the reheating. He barely needs to be here. He is but a token nod to past culinary glories. What a decadent idea. An actual chef who can cook things instead of pressing start on a microwave. What a novelty. This is broken Brent, he snorts to himself. The Gujaratis have really taken over every possible business. There's even a Gujarati family business dedicated to recycling the plastic containers all the pre-prepared food arrives in. He will help this man, yes. It's a slow day, and the manager has missed a trick. This is the only restaurant that doesn't offer a vegetarian Gujarati buffet. It's the only empty restaurant on Ealing Road. Sunday lunch in Brent is observed with all-you-can-eat buffets. They are a cash cow. Even Hindus like cash cows, he snorts to himself. In his head, he constantly tells himself he is hilarious. Ramsab thinks about stand-up comedy being a possible out for him. It's a shame he works nights anyway. Prakash shows Ramsab the book and the page in question. Ramsab looks down the page, oscillating his head from side to side in agreement with the recipe and instructions. Prakash smiles at Ramsab's nods of enthusiasm. He may well have found his chef. "When did your grandmother die?" Ramsab asks Prakash. 3 months ago, to this day." "Hmm, 3 months to the day. Fresh, like fish from the sea. Let me see, let me think, let me do. Ah, I will help you." Ramsab sometimes talks in rhyme when he's excited. "Thank you so much," Prakash says. His mask slips for a second, and he looks glum. "I miss her so much." "When did she write this recipe for you?" 6 months ago, for a wedding present. My fiber collected all the family recipes in this book so I could make them. I've been working through them." "How often have you attempted this particular recipe?" "Once a week since my grandmother died. I cannot get it right. Neither can my wife. It doesn't ever taste like grandmother's samosas, never." Ramsab ponders this. It is indeed a sad situation for Prakash to be in. This is a challenge. He has to make a samosa like Prakash's grandmother made it. This impersonation will be his greatest feat. To cook something with a taste so ingrained in a man's DNA because of family history that only a chef like him can accomplish the mimicry. This is the challenge he has been waiting for. "I accept the challenge." "It's not a challenge. I just wanted to help. I wanted you to help me decipher some of the writing." No, you will come into my kitchen and we will prepare the samosas. They will be just like your grandmother's. You will cry when you taste the first bite, and you will want to see her again because it will taste like she is in the room. We will not rest until we have achieved that, or until the restaurant closes, whichever comes first." Ramsab asks Prakash if these are Punjabi or Gujarati samosas. Prakash isn't aware there's a difference. Ramsab is horrified. "There is a massive difference," he explains. "The first major difference is the shape. The Punjabi samosa is more pasty shape, more 3D than its Gujarati counterpart, which is triangular." He makes a dirty joke, comparing the shape to female private parts. He laughs, much like someone who has never seen any female private parts, Prakash thinks, but then dismisses the thought. He only wants to think good things. This could be what he needs to taste his grandmother's food again. He's moved at Ramsab's enthusiasm for the project. He follows him into the kitchen. Ramsab takes out a sharp knife that has hitherto only been used to pierce the film on top of the cartons of food he has to reheat. He takes out the chopping board that he last used to make a papier-mâché moon for a fancy dress outfit. He takes out the garlic press, the grater, and some frozen peas. He finds some pastry. Lastly, he fills a big wok with a liter or so of sunflower oil and puts it on to simmer. So slowly to heat up, as per instructions. Ramsab notes that not only could Prakash's grandmother not write legibly, but she couldn't spell either. "Her written Gujarati is worse than my written Russian," he thinks. He knows this is an exaggeration. He looks at the first step. It's the hard bit, preparing the pastry, and he starts to do what he needs to. Prakash is watching intently and filming the process on his mobile phone. Ramsab instructs the camera as he goes, imagining himself on a cooking show. The camera represents his loving and adoring audience. Prakash is some celebrity brought into the studio to promote their new film or CD and is being shown how to make an authentic Gujarati dish. Ramsab imagines the story he will tell, how this was his grandmother's recipe and he learnt to perfect it so it would be he would be reminded of her whenever he ate the samosas. A perfect memory of her through her food. Ramsab stops his narration and video fantasy and stares at the recipe, bringing it up to his face for confirmation. She has suggested 3 tablespoons of garam masala instead of the usual 4. She is a maverick, he thinks. Should he follow her recipe, or should he do as his great teacher did? If he chooses option A, he is preserving the family recipe, written down for the first time ever. If he chooses option B, he is mutating it and evolving it. Prakash spots his hesitation and asks what's wrong.
Well, your grandmother has asked for 3 tablespoons of garam masala. Personally, I would put in 4, and I'm the best samosa maker in the whole of Brent.
He points up to a photograph where he's holding a 3-foot samosa in his hands, a red sash round him declaring, Mr. Samosa, Brent, 1998.
That's fine, Prakash says anxious, but I would really prefer if you followed my grandmother's recipe. I'm not trying to make the best samosa. I want to make her samosa.
I understand, Ramsab says.
This is turning out to be quite a challenge, especially now he has to go against everything he believes in. He should have asked for payment. Damn this rut. Damn Ealing Road. Damn Wembley. Damn Gujarati samosas. He puts in 3 tablespoons of garam masala. The 3rd spoon is heavy with the ground spice, and he tips it in quickly so Prakash won't spot his subversive act. Prakash notes the heft of the spoon and assumes that the recipe calls for generous portions. His grandmother always used to try and teach him how to make things and would insist that with Indian foods, you had to learn by doing. He looks towards the restaurant. From the kitchen vantage point, it's still empty, while the foot traffic outside ebbs and flows like a forceful tide. He looks at Ramsab, who is in his element. He stares intently at the page, tracing each word with his index finger, his nail yellow from years of turmeric use. Prakash remembers sitting on his grandmother's footstool in the kitchen and watching her make the samosas. The moment the oil had heated up to the point of bubbling was when he would start salivating expectantly. She would always let him drop 1 or 2 samosas into the wok before shielding him from any oil spatter. He would wait patiently. She would never let him have the first one. She insisted that the virgin oil hadn't soaked up the spices enough. The 2nd and 3rd were his. The 1st would form the base of a large pile. Prakash blinks and notices his hand has slipped, causing the camera to not catch all of the action. He asks Ramsab where he's from and how long he's lived in the UK, but Ramsab waves him off. He's concentrating. Ramsab cannot believe this woman's methods. They are insane. The 1st samosa is the freshest, he insists in his head. But as he steals a look at Prakash, he realizes that this isn't so much about what the perfect samosa is, it's about the perfect one for him. He feels sorry for this guy. The mixture is fried in oil and placed in a bowl next to him as he extracts shapes from phyllo pastry, slowly dolloping an exact tablespoon of innards onto them, folding in the right creases and leaving to one side. Prakash's phone has run out of memory, so he's watching intently. The kitchen is silent except for the hum of microwaves around them. 2 couples have arrived for food, and the waiters are heating up their order for them. This is the busiest it's been since opening at 9 a.m. The trade secret, the food being prepared off-site, it's all an elaborate disappointment once the veil of curry houses is pulled back from its purdah. Prakash realizes maybe he will never eat in an Indian restaurant again. Where's the love and tenderness that goes into the cooking? He can see Ramsab lifting up the 1st samosa. Ramsab is ready.
I will only make 5 samosas from this mixture, If it is the right one, we will make more.
Prakash nods. Ramsab looks at the simmering wok and cranks the heat up a bit. The wok takes about 5 minutes of awkward silence before it starts to boil. When the first bubble plops at the top, Prakash licks his lips in anticipation. That smell has hit his nose. He is Pavlov's dog. He has to sit down and watch, his hands clasped. He has a specific memory of one samosa he ate. It was the week after his grandfather had died, and his grandmother had stopped wearing the white morning sari. She was back on her feet, keeping busy. He hadn't even been hungry, instead being 10 years old and clingy, followed her around the house, checking up on her to shield him from his own hurt. She eventually found the best way to get rid of him. She heated up the wok of oil and pulled out some pre-prepared frozen ones. They tasted of life before his grandfather had died. They tasted electric. It was a wonder he hadn't put on any weight. Ramsab pulls his face closer to the bubbling wok and decides it is ready. He plunges the first samosa in, and heated bubbles caress it as it fizzes in the wok, cooking quickly. Prakash gasps. Ramsab smirks. He likes being able to shock and awe eaters once more. He remembers the first samosas he ever made, aged 11, to appease his father for getting bad marks at school and to impress a girl he loved, who loved food more than men. He considered himself a chubby chaser and loved feeding girls the deep-fried delights he cooked up in the kitchen. He remembers the way his dad smiled and wiped the grease from his fingers onto the school report, fudging the grades, making the illegible handwritten character assassinations meaningless. He remembers how the girl, Basanti, let him kiss her after her second samosa. He could taste the flakes of pastry in his mouth. To this day, samosa flakes arouse him in some form or another. Prakash remembers the day his grandmother died. He had promised to take her to bingo, a pastime they both loved, seeing as it didn't involve conversation or language skills of any kind, seeing as the bingo caller now used an electronic number generator. They had got into an argument with his mother and their neighbour about the correct rules for a syndicate. He maintained that the syndicate was legion and all were equal within it. Whereas his mother and their neighbour sought to assert, having had the winning houses, that they got a larger percentage of the winnings as they had possessed winning tickets. He was appalled at their behaviour. His grandmother sat quietly in the corner clutching her chest. He had assumed she had cramp from all the felt pen rubbing on the bingo sheets. By the time they tried to usher her out of the car at her house, she had died, quietly in the front seat, sitting on Prakash's new Kanye West CD, while he attempted to railroad his mother into giving him back his equal share, now that the neighbour had gone away back home. Ramsab lifts the first one out of the wok and places it down on the cutting board to cool. He places another samosa into the fizzle of the oil and watches it brown. Prakash picks up the first samosa and throws it in the bin. Ramsab understands now. The first one isn't the right one. This is all starting to make sense to him. Maybe, he wonders, it doesn't matter so much whether the samosa tastes exactly like the grandmother's recipe. Maybe it's the process that Prakash wants. He saw how the smell of the sizzling oil made him weak at the knees. Ramsab thinks back to a year after his mother's death, when he had defrosted some of her old okra shark and reheated it. The smell filled the kitchen with the smell of his mother and his eyes with the water of tears. For a pregnant second, mother and son were united. It's not about the samosa, he realizes. It's about the process. It's about the smells. It's about the journey. This oral history he is glancing down at, this will live on for generations as the most priceless artifact in Prakash's house. Ramsab then wonders whether he should be getting paid for this. They both stare into space, awkward with each other.
Ramsab sums up how much he can charge this man for his involvement, factoring in time, cost of ingredients, amenities like gas and electricity, minus how much enjoyment the last 2 hours have given him. Actually, he thinks, if he's to do that sum properly, he might end up owing Prakash something. Prakash is wondering how much to offer this great chef that wouldn't make him think that Prakash thinks he's cheap Wembley Gujarati chef, and how much will make him think Prakash is grateful. Neither comes to an agreed figure. Ramsab lifts out the second samosa, the perfect samosa, and places it on the cutting board. It's the right shade of beige. It's crisp and glistens with the remains of the oil. Prakash smiles, counting to 60 in his head before reaching down to try it. He picks it up. It smells exactly like grandmother's samosa. He smiles at Ramsab as they both ingest the aroma loudly through their thick nasal hairs. Prakash lifts the samosa to his salivating mouth. It smells of her, and he is transported back to a montage of memories. Hiding in a sari away from arguing parents, her teaching him how to write his name in Gujarati, him reading comics while she watched Neighbours, hours of bingo, mountains of samosas, each one tasting like those moments, like that brilliant, amazing time when they would spend entire summers together while his mum and dad worked. His teeth crunch through the hot, flaky pastry, and 1,000 sensations dance into his mouth like a triumphant procession led by elephants, trumpets blaring, men dancing in concentric circles, women looking demure under their saris. The filling hits the back of his throat as he chews, and in his head he can see his grandmother walking through the thick crowds of jubilation, and he chases her and runs towards her, putting a hand on her shoulder and spinning her round as the sun beats down upon them. She spins around, he swallows, he smiles. It is one. This is it. This is the meaning of life, he shouts in his brain. How was it? Asks Ramsab, sweating anxiously, using a knife to dislodge cumin seeds from under his nails. Outside, the Ealing Road carries on bustling, as if nothing short of a miracle has just happened here.